Good evening, everyone. This is Lou Cavalli for the Divided Kingdom. And here it is, January. In fact, the second week of January. Maybe it's the third week, come to think of it. Here it is, the 13th of January, as I record this, it'll be broadcast. Here's the evening, the 15th of January, 2026. So welcome to the program. This is a Christian program that kind of analyzes some of the less well-known points of the news. As I've said before, I try to select items that will not be obsolete in a day or two when the program is broadcast, and things that have a long-term impact. You can hear us, hear the program, Divided Kingdom, by going to WWCR Thursday evenings, to their website, WWCR.com, Worldwide Christian Radio, and just select the proper transmitter. I think it's transmitted through, however, it will say on that if you check their schedule. That's at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You can also hear it on shortwave. There's the evenings, 8 p.m., 4.840 megahertz. And the program repeats Saturday morning at 8 a.m. on those same venues, WWCR.com, or shortwave on a frequency of 7.490 megahertz, 7.490. So there's a couple ways you can hear it on the spot as it's happening, or at least a rebroadcast. You can also hear it by going to our website, DividedKingdomRadio.com. That's DividedKingdomRadio.com, and go to the archives. And then you can hear it anytime, day or night. And you can also hear other programs from the past. Now, let's get right on to some of the things that are happening. California always has money problems, it seems. They spend more than they have, like all too many politicians. Here's something from the Gateway Pundit, dated January 12th, 2026. This is by Mike LaChance. And the headline reads, report, California has lost $8 trillion. Yes, you heard that right. It's not million, not billion, but $1 trillion in a month due to talk about a new billionaire tax. That's in quotes, billionaire tax. And the article reads, progressives in California have been pushing for a new billionaire tax. And even though it hasn't passed yet, the state is already suffering massive financial consequences. As in every other time in history, wealthy people hear talk like this, and they pack up and leave. It has been estimated that California has lost upwards of $1 trillion in the last month. And a little repetition here, California lost a mind-boggling nearly $1 trillion in wealth in the past month alone, thanks to fears over the proposed billionaire tax, according to one of the state's wealthiest residents. The under fire measure, which even lefty Gavin Newsom opposes, would slap a one-time 5% tax on residents worth more than $1 billion as of January 1st, 2026. And here's a quote. Collectively, the amount of billionaire wealth that has left California in the last month is now in excess of $700 billion, which would be two-thirds of a trillion. And that was a statement. It says it was fumed venture capitalist and former Facebook executive Seamus Palihapitiya. Hope I've got that pronunciation right. Palihapitiya on X on Friday. He went on to say, this means the $2 trillion of California wealth they expected to tax is now down to $1.3 trillion and falling quickly. And he went on to say, I would not be surprised if 2026 ended with less than $1 trillion of billionaire wealth in California and decades and hundreds of lawsuits, Palihapitiya said, of the tax. And as I understand it, as I read last week, I'm quite sure. The thing about this is not an income tax. It's not a tax on how much you're making for the year. It's a tax on what you're worth. And let me read this because I was having a little trouble flipping the page here. And the quote, I'll just read that quote one more time. I would not be surprised if 2026 ended with less than $1 trillion of billionaire wealth in California and decades and hundreds of lawsuits. Calapatia said of the whopping sum, which is enough, get this, to buy the entire NFL several times over and fund NASA at its current annual level for 40 years. He raged, quote, a complete and total unforced error. Where is the governor? Where are our leaders? Unquote. California Republican Kevin Carley recently appeared on Newsmax and pointed out that even if it passed, this tax would not solve the state's financial problems. Rather than raising taxes, which are already among the highest in the country, California needs to cut the size of government and spending. They need to do more to attract businesses and wealth to the state, instead of scaring them away. Mostly the state needs new leadership. It's amazing that Gavin Newsom has been able to hold on to his job for this long, despite what he has done to a once great state. Now, that was dated January 12th. As I record, this is January 13th. And this coming over the presses on Fox News, they mentioned that Gavin Newsom is now trying to take credit for fighting against this bill. And it mentions that Larry Page, the Google co-founder, has now relocated several of his businesses. And he did that in December. Because as you'll notice, this is supposed to go into effect for any businesses owned as of January 1st, 2026. So if you owned a business in California in the new year, and you can't, you know, get away from the tax just by leaving now. You have to have left before the end of last year, before the end of 2025. And Larry Page also purchased two Miami properties valued above $73.4 million. Also, Oracle chairman Larry Ellison sold his San Francisco mansion for $45 million. And I think that Fox News story that I caught at the last minute had some other instances. But you have to figure, what was that percent again? Let me look that up now. It was going to be, let me see. I think it was 5%. Yes, 5%. Well, what is $1 billion times 5%? Oh, let me see if I can do that in my head. I used to teach math, but I always used to calculate it in late years, of course. Well, let me see now. To get a billion, you got to put a 1 followed by 9 zeros. So take off 2 of those. Oh, this is too much to do in my head. Anyway, it's way up there. I think it's maybe $50 million. So who's got $50 million in cash? Even among the richest folks, I doubt that they've got ready cash available that they can go to the bank and take out $50 million bucks. Or, you know, dig it out of the backyard if it's buried in the backyard. I don't think the average rich person has that. Their money is tied up in real estate, investments, stocks, things like that. Property, plant, and equipment, as we used to say in accounting courses. I doubt that they could just, on the spur of the moment, come up with that kind of money. Now, it says you can spread it out, I think, over 5 years. But even then, that is asking a lot, and this is scaring people off to beat the band. Now, listen, the rich are not the only ones leaving California. I know two or three people, personally, who are so fed up with California, they've gotten out while the getting was good. They've moved away for good, and we're never going back. Okay, well, let's switch gears a little bit now. Here's something more shocking in a more immediate way from WorldNet Daily. And I should mention, the article I just read was from the Gateway Pundit, dated January 12th, about California losing the $1 trillion in a month. Now, the new one I'm about to read is from the WorldNet Daily, and it's entitled, and this is in quotes, "It's simple. We kill J.D. Vance," unquote. Radio personality out the door after allegedly threatening the life of the vice president. This is by Bob Unger, as I said, WorldNet Daily, January 12th, 2026. And the subheadline reads, "The incident underscores the growing concern of a violent rhetoric online and the challenges of monitoring and responding to threats in the digital age." A suspect, reportedly a radio show host at WUML, affiliated with the University of Massachusetts at Lowell, is out of a job, and an investigation is underway after an alleged death threat to Vice President J.D. Vance. The threat said, quote, "It's simple. We kill J.D. Vance," unquote, and allegedly was posted by an online user who was a radio host for the station that long has worked on a reputation for being a community voice. It's run by students and funded by the university. And I should mention, this is Lou speaking now, that you miss, this is the branch, not the main branch of the University of Maryland. I should say the University of Massachusetts, which is in Amherst, Massachusetts, in the central part of the state. This is in the northeastern part, one of several branches in Lowell, Massachusetts. Getting back to the article, when the post recently appeared, school officials called authorities and officers from campus police, the FBI, Secret Service, and others launched an investigation. Authorities soon claimed there was no quote-unquote immediate danger, but still the gravity of the threat against the life of the sitting vice president called for more investigation. The school blasted the threat, which appeared on a minor social media platform called Blue Sky, and confirmed that a person responsible, a university alumnus, left a volunteer position at the station. The threat was deleted. An online report at UMVA said, "The incident underscores the growing concern over violent rhetoric online and the challenges of monitoring and responding to threats in the digital age. It highlights the responsibility of both individuals and institutions to uphold standards of respectful discourse and public safety." Fox News said the posting came from an accounted identified as Hans Lopez. And they have a comma. I would have thought this was a dot, but I'm not sure about that. Hans Lopez, comma, BSKY, comma, social. That's the way this reads. A statement that was released said, quote, "UMass Lowell takes seriously any threat of violence involving our community. Statements such as the post in question are inconsistent with the values of our democracy and our university. The individual in question has since resigned from his volunteer role at WUML and removed the post from his Blue Sky account," unquote. And as it says, this is one of those things you can't tell. And that is a loose speaking. That concluded the article. You can't tell whether this is to be taken very seriously or not until an investigation is made. It could be just somebody shooting off the mouth. But after all, there have been two attempts on the president's life. And we've seen a whole slew in the past several decades of beginning with the assassination of John F. Kennedy, and then the assassination of Martin Luther King, Robert Kennedy, attempted assassination of George Wallace, all in the 60s. In the 70s, there were two attempts on the life of Gerald Ford. In the 80s, there was an attempt that was almost fatal, shooting Ronald Reagan, and so on and so forth. So all of these incidents, while that might just be somebody joking, you just can't ignore it. Okay, that was WorldNet Daily on January 12th. Now, shifting gears still further, we have something from LifeSite News. Massachusetts father wins injunction against school that pushed LGBT books on five-year-old son. And the subheadline reads, a federal judge ruled that the child's elementary school must ensure he is no longer exposed to pro-homosexual books in a, quote, massive win for parents across the Commonwealth, unquote. This, as I said, appeared in LifeSite News, Friday, January 9th, 2026. And the thing that astonished me is, why are you pushing this kind of thing on a five-year-old who has no knowledge of sex, no real knowledge of gender, very little at least? Yes, he knows what a boy and a girl is, but not much beyond that. But at any rate, this is Dateline, Lexington, Massachusetts. We've all heard of the Battle of Lexington and Concord. Well, this is the same Lexington. And it reads, a Massachusetts father has won a preliminary injunction against a local school district that has insisted on exposing his five-year-old son to pro-LGBTQ books. The case pitted a devout Christian father, cited as Alan L., period. In other words, they didn't give the full name. Father of J.L. in court documents. And it was a case against the Lexington Public School District, or LPSD for short. And also in particular, Joseph Estabrook Elementary School. The father objected to the content of certain books concerning sexual themes and contended that his child has been compelled, quote, to participate in classroom instruction that promotes sexualized and ideological messages directly contrary to his family's faith, unquote. He also contended that as a parent, he has the right to be notified before his son is exposed to objectionable sexual material and to be able to opt his child out of lessons and other classroom activities involving those materials. Before bringing a civil suit before the court, Alan L. said that his request to opt his son out of the kindergarten classroom exposures to LGBTQ-themed materials had been repeatedly rejected by the Lexington Public School District and the particular elementary school, Joseph Estabrook Elementary School. Quote, Lexington's refusal came even after the U.S. Supreme Court's landmark decision last summer in Mahmoud versus Taylor, which held the schools must give notice and an opportunity to opt out of content that threatens to undermine parents' religious belief, unquote. Noted, the Massachusetts Liberty Legal Center, which, in conjunction with the American Center for Law and Justice, represented the kindergartner's dad. Father Alan L. said that on September 16th, J.L., that is his son, was shown a read-aloud, that's the title, read-aloud video of the book Families, Families, Families by Suzanne Lyon in his health class. And the quote from the father continues, he viewed that lesson as directly contradicting his religious beliefs, and it occurred despite his explicit opt-out request, according to the court. The boy allegedly was exposed to at least one similarly themed book entitled All Are Welcome by Alexandra Penford. As a result of the district's actions, Jay Elizabeth has been exposed to moral instruction about marriage, sexuality, and family that directly contradicts the biblical teachings in which his family believes, wrote the court. And it continues, this has required Alan to be prepared to discuss sensitive topics related to sexuality, marriage, and family structures much earlier than he wanted or believes is appropriate for his child's age and maturity level. Austin's U.S. District Court Judge F. Dennis Sale IV ordered both the school district and the school where J.L. attends kindergarten to, quote, make reasonable efforts to ensure that the boy is not taught or otherwise exposed to the content of the identified books, whether in the classroom or any other school setting, unquote. This order represents a massive win for parents across the Commonwealth, declared MLLC, which is the Massachusetts Liberty Legal Center. It went on, public school districts will now be on notice that playing fast and loose with parental rights, parental rights, will expose them to significant liability, unquote. The order given by the court is a preliminary injunction halting the current ongoing harm against kindergartner JL and his family while the lawsuit works its way through the court system. And here we have a quote from the attorney group. If we ultimately succeed in this lawsuit or reach a settlement, Lexington could be on the hook for thousands of dollars in attorney's fees. And schools will be advised that the responsibility is on them, not on parents, to identify materials in that curriculum that could burden a family's expressed religious beliefs. And the MLLC, the Massachusetts Liberty Legal Center, went on, to our knowledge, this is the first case on the issue of curriculum opt-out rights anywhere in the country since the Mahmoud Supreme Court ruling. It is highly significant that the court here clarified that schools cannot place the burden on parents to identify every specific material they object to, which was a question left open by Mahmoud, unquote. In its landmark Mahmoud versus Taylor decision last June, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled 6-3 in favor of parents opting their children out of school lessons featuring pro-LGBT indoctrination over the objections of a Maryland school board. All right, interesting article. Once again, this is Blue speaking now. I cannot conceive, let me put it that way, of a five-year-old having any interest in this or even really understanding what it's all about. And here they're trying to foist this stuff on kids who are not even in first grade yet. I remember kindergarten. You know, we learned numbers. We drew pictures, listened to the stories. I certainly didn't remember anything in my kindergarten experience about sex. And I wouldn't have understood a word of it if it had. You know, a child of that age has no awareness of sexuality. They haven't reached puberty. They still have a long way to go to get there. And they simply would have no conception of what this is talking about. This is obviously a certain group of people trying to foist their ideas on everybody else. It's a power struggle. And I can't see it as anything else than that. Okay. Once again, if you'd like to write to me, I always start to say us because I haven't yet gotten totally used to the idea that I don't have Elizabeth with me anymore. It'll be a year next month that she passed away, and I truly miss her greatly. And some of you have written the nicest letters to me, and I thank you for them, saying that you too miss her voice in the radio. This was originally her idea to have this program, and I think of it as a way to honor her to continue it. She was devoted to it. She spent a lot of time preparing for it, and she enjoyed doing it, and her whole heart went into it. So thank you for those kind words. And if you'd like to write to me, you can write to Lou Cavalli, L-O-U, D-A-V as in Victor, E-R-L-Y, Post Office Box 28. And the little town is Bethlehem. Although we were kidding the other day, the natives tend to call it Bethlehem. They say it the fast way. But for most of us, it's Bethlehem, Maryland. A little town on the eastern shore of Maryland. Across Chesapeake Bay from Washington and Baltimore. Out in the country. And our zip code is 21609. So, love to get letters from you. If you can make a contribution to keep the program on the air, it'll be very greatly appreciated. But even if you don't have that wherewithal, just jot a little letter down. And believe me, it will be appreciated. And I thank all of those of you who have written to me lately. I still have about four or five books. That's all that's left. And I doubt that I'll have the money to order another whole group of books, because you have to order quite a few at a time. The book, COVID and Coming Chaos, the book that Elizabeth wrote with my help about 3 years ago, maybe it's four now, time goes by. But people are still getting COVID, so it's still relevant. If you'd like a copy of that book, just write to me at that address, Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. But I have to tell you, I have very few left, so I'll have to limit it to one per person, and it will have to be first come, first serve. If I were to get a lot of them, I could try to maybe put a small order in if they'll permit that at the publisher. But I'm going to have to kind of weigh that in the balance, see how the money goes. So I think the book is still relevant, still interesting. If any of you would like it, just write to me, say, please send me your book. And I'll certainly do that. I mailed two of them out today. But I don't think there are more than six left. So I'll warn you that we're getting short. Okay, what else do we have here in the news? Of course, there's all kind of things. Venezuela, I didn't put that in too much today because that's so much in the mainstream news. Everybody knows about that now. And that is liable to change between the day I record this on Tuesday and the day you hear it on Thursday or Saturday. So I tend to stay away from those things that are already well known in the mainstream media and that are changing rapidly. And then there are some other stories. There's a Supreme Court story about should you let men take part in girls' sports? I think it's ridiculous myself. The very idea that a man could just say he's a woman and therefore they'd let him compete against girls in an unfair match, to me is ridiculous. I'll just say it that way. And I think to most of you it probably is too. And I certainly hope the Supreme Court comes down on the side of fairness to the women. Well, now, want to know where some of your money goes for taxes? Here's one from the Washington Times. Yesterday, as I'm recording this, Monday, January 12th, House staffer charged with swiping and pawning hundreds of government cell phones. This was, as I said, from the Washington Times, authored by Susan Ferriccio. And it says, a former House committee staffer has been arrested on charges of stealing hundreds of government cell phones and selling them at a pawn shop. According to the FBI and the U.S. Capitol Police, Christopher Sutherland, 43, of Glen Burnie, Maryland, stole and then cashed in on the equipment. From January 2023 to May 2023, he swiped approximately 240 government cell phones valued at more than $150,000 and sold them to a pawn shop near his home. He was arrested Friday and charged in U.S. District Court. U.S. Attorney Jeanine Pirro announced on Monday. According to Ms. Pirro, Mr. Sutherland used his position as a system administrator on the House Transportation and Infrastructure Committee, which allowed him to order cell phones for committee staffers in order to carry out his scheme. At the time, about 80 staffers were working on the committee. Mr. Sutherland ordered 240 phones and had them shipped directly to his Glen Burnie home before selling most of them to the pawn shop. He told a pawn shop employee to sell the phones, quote, in parts, unquote, in order to bypass the house cell phone security and monitoring software. But his plan failed. One of the phones was sold whole on eBay to an unsuspecting purchaser. who noticed the phone displayed a number for the House of Representatives Technology Service Desk. The buyer called the number, leading House employees to eventually figure out their cell phone inventory came up short. Mr. Sutherland is no longer working for the committee. In his LinkedIn profile, Mr. Sutherland describes himself as seeking work and lists skills including project coordination, documentation, and reporting. He also touts, quote, excellent communication skills, a passion for customer service, and strong problem-solving skills, unquote. He lists the start of employment in the U.S. House, as September 2018. And according to the U.S. Attorney's Office, he worked for the Transportation and Infrastructure Committee from April 2020 until July 2023. Well, in spite of his advertisement, this is Lou speaking now, in spite of his LinkedIn profile, I don't think he's going to be working too much in the near future, seeing as he has been arrested and charged with stealing. So, well, compared to the $1 trillion, or was it two? Anyway, the trillions of dollars in California, this is small potatoes. Nevertheless, if he did it, goodness knows how much other crime is going on, wasting people's dollars. And of course, Minnesota, I haven't got much in Minnesota. I kind of beat that as a dead horse, but there's still ongoing investigations of that huge fraud in Minnesota with daycare centers and all kinds of things going on to, what's the word, not embezzle, just to steal, I guess. Steal is a good word. Steal the government's money. Money that was supposed to go to the little kids. Ended up, some of it in Somalia. May have gone to terrorists. It's a can of worms. And the governor there, Walz, former vice president candidate, he is trying to cover up everything he can. He's trying to say, I didn't know about it. Or if I did, I would have taken care of it. I did take care of some of it. Yeah. Well, not much of it from the sound of it. Anyway, that's been covered by the mainstream media, and no doubt will continue to be covered. The Republicans sent blood. That's, what's the word? The Republicans, is it sent blood? No, that's not quite right. Sense blood, I guess, is the word. Anyway, they know this is a good political thing for them to hype up. And it's real. I mean, $2 billion, I think, was the amount. Or was it $1 billion? Anyway, that's a lot of money. Think what I could do with $1 billion. Have homes in maybe every state of the union. Do all kinds of great things. I didn't want it, of course. What would I do with it? Seriously. But that's a ton of money. Our money. Money we pay taxes on. That just went into the pockets of a bunch of thieves. All right, now on a serious note, from Fox News, January 13th, and that's today as I'm recording this, Mississippi synagogue arson suspect's dad turns him in after laughing confession, FBI says. And the subtitle, Stephen Pittman faces up to 20 years in prison for weekend arson for 165-year-old Beth Israel congregation in Jackson, Mississippi. And here's the text. A suspect accused of setting fire to a Mississippi synagogue, once bombed by the KKK, Ku Klux Klan, admitted he targeted the building because it is a Jewish house of worship. He was turned into police after a laughing, I'm getting my tongue tied here, after a laughing confession to his father, the FBI said Monday. Stephen Pittman, age 19, was charged in federal court with maliciously damaging or destroying a building by fire or explosive in connection with the weekend arson at Beth Israel Congregation and Jackson. And again, that's Mississippi. According to an FBI affidavit, Pittman admitted to lighting the fire inside the synagogue, referring to it as the synagogue of Satan. Authorities said Pittman's father contacted the FBI after he observed burns on Pittman's ankles, hands, and face, and after hearing his son confess to setting the building on fire. And here's a quote. Pittman laughed as he told his father what he did and said he finally got them, unquote, the FBI said in the document, according to WLBT-TV. Pittman made his first appearance Monday in U.S. District Court via video from a hospital bed where both of his hands were visibly bandaged. A public defender was appointed to represent him. Prosecutors say Pittman faces 5 to 20 years in prison if convicted. When the judge advised him of his rights, Pittman responded, "Jesus Christ is Lord." And that's an exact quote. Let me just speak up here on my own. This is Lou speaking. Obviously, this man doesn't think Jesus Christ is Lord if he's going around setting fires to houses of worship. I don't care if they're Jewish, Muslim, or whatever they are. So I don't know his background, but he is completely deluded or just evil. Anyway, reading on, Pittman told the judge he is a high school graduate who completed 3 semesters of college. He's scheduled to return to court January 20th for a preliminary and detention hearing. The fire broke out shortly after 3 a.m. Saturday. No congregants or firefighters were injured, but the blaze caused extensive damage to the synagogue's library and administrative offices. Security footage released by the congregation shows a masked hooded individual pouring liquid from a gas can onto the floor and onto a couch inside the building's lobby. Investigators say Pittman stopped at a gas station beforehand to buy gasoline and removed his vehicle's license plate. He allegedly used an axe to break a window, poured fuel inside the synagogue, and ignited it with a torch lighter. The affidavit says Pittman texted his father a photo of the synagogue before the fire, writing, quote, "There's a furnace in the back," unquote. When his father urged him to come home, Pittman allegedly replied that he was, quote, "due for a home run," unquote, and said, quote, "I did my research," unquote. Investigators later recovered a burned cell phone believed to belong to Pittman and seized a hand torch found by a congregant. 5 Torah scrolls inside the sanctuary were being evaluated for smoke damage. 2 other scrolls stored in the synagogue's library were destroyed. Another Torah that survived the Holocaust was protected behind glass and was not damaged, the congregation said. The 165-year-old synagogue is the largest one in the state and was previously bombed by the Ku Klux Klan in the 1960s. And Beth Israel congregation said in a statement, quote, "This news puts a face and name to this tragedy, but does not change our resolve to proudly, even defiantly, continue Jewish life in Jackson in the face of hatred," unquote. And Attorney General Pam Bondi said in a statement to the U.S. Attorney's Office for the Southern District of Mississippi that she has directed prosecutors to seek severe penalties. She said, quote, "This disgusting act of anti-Semitic violence has no place in our country. And unlike the prior administration, this Department of Justice will not let anti-Semitism fester and flourish," said Pam Bondi. And that again was in Fox News, foxnews.com, January 13th. Mississippi synagogue arson suspect's dad turns him in, etc. All right. Now, you've probably seen some pictures if you watch any TV. I don't watch TV anymore, partly because I hardly ever watched it anyway. And it was getting so doggone expensive for the cable that even before Elizabeth passed away, while she was in good health, we decided we were spending over $1,200 a year on TV that we hardly ever watched. We both like to read. And we seldom turn the TV on. Maybe a little bit of news if there was some special big event going on. And sometimes we get the weather for about 5 minutes or less. She liked to watch figure skating, but that was only on maybe 6 or 7 hours in the entire year. So we just thought to ourselves, why are we paying over $1,000 for something we hardly ever watch? So right now I don't have TV. I do have an antenna, and I've been too lazy to hook it up. Too busy to hook it up. I hope it'll bring in a couple of stations in Salisbury, Maryland, which is the largest fair-sized city to where I live. Maybe also Annapolis, Maryland is a good educational station that has some concerts and things of that nature, artistic things. So I'm going to try that. But now I digressed. What I was saying was, if you watch much TV lately, you've seen all kind of protesting. Of course, there were protests of this, that, the other thing. Now it's protesting of this shooting of a protester in, I forget if it was Minneapolis or St. Paul, Twin Cities of Minnesota. Minnesota's already been in the news lately, all kinds of ways. But you often hear the claim that some of these protesters are professionals. That's what they do for a living. They just protest. And they don't really care what's going on. At least some of them don't. They just get paid to protest. Well, here's one. The World Net Daily, January 11th, by Joe Kovacs. The headline reads, "Disgusting. Same professional protester allegedly found at nearly 100 different protests." And the text reads, "The video purportedly exposing a, quote, professional protester, unquote, at nearly 100 different protests is going viral with more than 7 million views on the internet in a single day on Sunday. The clip by independent journalist Nate Friedman was shared by Elon Musk and begins with Friedman interviewing a woman at a protest who says, quote, right now I'm representing myself. And I'm representing the folks at Rise and Resist," unquote. Friedman asked her, "How much do they pay you to wear this vest?" "Absolutely nothing," she responds. Now, Rise and Resist builds itself as a, quote, nonviolent, direct action group committed to opposing, disrupting, and defeating any government act that threatens democracy, equality, and our civil liberties, unquote. It also claims, quote, all profits pay for our signs, banners, handouts, etc. We are made up of 100% unpaid volunteers, unquote. Friedman says he did some digging, and the woman trying to stop my interview is named Karen Schall, S-C-H-A-L-L. She is a professional protester. I found her at almost 100 different protests. And shows some pictures if you go to the website. I'll give that again in a few minutes. But down below it says, let's look at her portfolio, shall we? And this is still a quotation from, what was his name again? Let me see now. Nate Friedman. He says, let's look at her portfolio, shall we? Here's her outside Trump Tower saying, TikTok's time is up. Here's her saying, ban guns, not drag. Amazing. This is her telling us that lies have consequences. She's also very passionate about abortion. Even in the video right now, she's just wearing a hat that says abortion on it. Sometimes she gets less creative, though, and just holds a sign that says enough. Now, here, I found her working with a different professional protester that I've exposed. That's Stuart Waldman, He was there when they raised the Palestinian flag over City Hall in Rhode Island, unquote. Friedman points out that Waldman is, quote, on the board of RiseAndResist.org, the company that is paying people like Karen for a second job as a professional protester. And the donation link to give this, that is to give this organization money, is just ActBlue, which is the fundraising platform for the Democrat Party, unquote. And regarding Shaw, and what's her name again? Let me see now. Check back here. Karen, K-A-R-I-N, Shaw, S-E-H-A-L-L. And regarding Karen Shaw, Friedman says, I found her with another professional protester that I've exposed. This is back at the Tesla protest. This is just a few photos of this other professional protester out of maybe 50 that I found. And, of course, if you go to the website, which was WorldNet Daily, you can see some of these photos. Disgusting, said Bill Clinton's sexual assault accuser, Juanita Broderick, of the woman protesting. She appears very proud of her accomplishments, unquote. Dominic Alvieri, a cybersecurity analyst in Philadelphia, reacted to the video saying, quote, many protesters are paid tax-free, unquote. Paid protesters, and this is, again, out of his quote, paid protesters are even advertised on several mainstream platforms like Indeed and ZipRecruiter, usually taxed, and have several job types. Finding them now requires more granular search using different keywords. Rise and Resist is still active, but you're right about ActBlue, unquote. And I'll stop there, but it does say that they can make over $50,000 as an annual salary doing some of these protests. So no wonder you get so many protests because they're being paid just to protest. Sounds like they don't have a great deal of interest in what they're protesting. They just get out there and protest. Well, here's something that's a little off the cuff, a little different at least. And that, by the way, as I said, was WorldNet Daily. And the date was about January 11th, authored by Joe Kovacs. Now, from the Washington Times, maritime crime hits post-pandemic high as piracy surges worldwide. Well, if you're like me, you thought that pirates were from the days of Captain Kidd and Blackbeard and all those guys way back, what was it, 1700s probably? But no, there are pirates around today. This is by Joseph Hammond, special to the Washington Times, Thursday, January 8th, 2026. Last year was a period of growth for pirates in the Gulf of Guinea eastward to the Caribbean Sea, raising global maritime crime to its highest levels since the onset of COVID-19. Quote, incidents of piracy and armed robbery are often local in nature, but the consequences felt internationally when, during the height of Somali piracy, we had a large number of ships rerouting to avoid the Horn of Africa. Those are the words of Cyrus Modi, M-O-D-Y, Deputy Director of the International Maritime Bureau. He went on to say, when this happens, it has a direct impact on the price consumers find on the shelves, unquote. Data published by the U.S. Office of Naval Intelligence shows a similar peak in pirate activity. The U.S. Navy reported four-year highs for piracy in the Gulf of Guinea, off the Western Africa coast, and in the Singapore Strait. The office noted 13 incidents of hijackings, kidnappings, and other violent incidents around the Horn of Africa last year, down from 18 in 2024. Somali pirates are increasingly intermingled with other arms smuggling and the activities of the Houthi terrorist group in Yemen. The Zaydi Shiite Islamist movement has been waging an insurgency against Yemen's internationally backed government since 2004. Piracy off the Horn of Africa remains a problem despite the presence of a large European Union-led anti-piracy mission and a nominal end to attacks on shipping from the Houthis last month. Regional regional security also has increased in the Horn of Africa. With a fragile ceasefire holding in the Middle East, more shipping is returning to the Red Sea. CMA CGM, the world's third largest shipping line, plans to begin regular Suez Canal traffic early this year. And here we have another quote, "Piracy remains a persistent threat, but we have taken important measures to increase maritime security," said Mohammed Muse Abouli, Deputy Intelligence Director of the Puntland Maritime Police Force. He went on, "This is a very strategic region, and every decision we make here can have global consequences on trade," unquote. As recently as December 5th, a Barbados flag vessel was swarmed by 15 small craft in the Bab el Mandeb Strait off Yemen's coast. The would-be attackers, some of whom close to within 656 feet, began firing. They were driven off only by return fire from an armed private security team aboard the vessel. Piracy is also up in the Western Hemisphere, including in the Caribbean. In Haiti, armed gangs routinely use kidnapping for ransom as a core part of their fundraising strategy. Haitian criminals are now applying that strategy to vessels moored in Haitian waters or docked in Haitian ports. Last spring, an armed gang boarded a Panama-flagged bulk carrier near Port-au-Prince. As the April 2nd attack unfolded, crew members scrambled for safety, hiding in their cabins and in the engine room. Still, the pirates abducted two crew members. Five piracy incidents were reported last year in the Gulf of America, previously the Gulf of Mexico, to the east of the Yucatan Peninsula, among the one of Mexico's most important oil fields. And it goes on with some more statistics. I won't read all the details. It does mention that some of these big boats have put barbed wire around to try to keep the pirates from boarding the vessels. They also have deployed water cannons. But on February 1st, the crew of a Portugal flag ship in the Gulf of Guinea off the coast of Nigeria discovered pirates cutting the vessel's protected barbed wire under the cover of darkness. The crew took appropriate measures by turning on outside lights, making a distress call, and retreating to the ship's citadel. The element of surprise cut the pirates off guard. They abandoned their assault. But the threat lingered. For 45 minutes, the pirate vessel was tracked on radar. I assume that means the ship's radar, before the assailants finally vanished into the night. And just glancing down here, anything else of interest? It says that some of the Singapore's Navy is engaged in training drills. In the drill, two to five perpetrators planning to steal valuable items board a ship under the cover of darkness. Such groups are increasingly armed. More than 70 such incidents were reported in the region last year. The most since record-keeping began in 1991 in the Singapore Strait, according to the International Maritime Bureau. Well, it seems that piracy then is not something from the days of sailing ships, but is alive and well, at least in certain parts of the world. I guess where there's money to be made, by crime or otherwise, people will try and make it. And you can get a few rich people and hold them for ransom. Well, that's one way to get some money. Well, our time is running out short. So let me again say, if you want to hear our program, you may be listening to it now in shortwave. Thursday nights, 8 p.m., 4.840. And the program repeats Saturday mornings at 8 a.m. on 7.490 megahertz. And you can hear it on your computer or cell phone by going to WWCR.com. That's Worldwide Christian Radio. And don't forget, you can go to our archives at our website. Have to stop and think. DividedKingdomRadio.com. I was drawing a blank there. I must be getting old. DividedKingdomRadio.com. Go to the listening archives. You can pick the date you want and listen at any time of day or night. And usually the archives are up and running within a day or two of the program's broadcast. Well, I want to thank you for listening. We have a minute or two left. I'll just mention some of the things that are going on. One of our listeners mentioned I should talk about some of the corruption in Maryland. I haven't had a lot of time to devote to that yet, but I'm going to get to that. I think any state has a certain amount of corruption. Minnesota kind of leads the pack in the moment, but it's by no means the only state. They just have gotten caught in a big, big way. Well, maybe they are by far the biggest state. I shouldn't say that. Billions of dollars, that's a lot of money. Especially when it should have been caught long ago. And as for Maryland, I've been pretty happy. I've lived in Maryland since 1969. That's a long time. Grew up in Massachusetts. You might still detect just a little bit of a Massachusetts accent when I speak. If I talk about Harvard, you can probably hear the lack of an R there. My dear wife Elizabeth used to kind of get on me about that. Said, you know, say the words right. Pronounce those R's the way you should. Don't say go park your car. Say park your car. So I try to be like my Maryland friends. But we appreciate your listening. If you want to write to me, once again, the address is Luke Hamerly, Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. We're a beautiful little community on the eastern shore of Maryland, farm country predominantly. It's a great place to live. And we hope you all are having a good 2026. Write to me if you can. You can send a little donation. Much appreciated, but you don't have to. Just write to me. And I wish you a good week ahead. Thank you for listening. Good night.